City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
Welcome in to the All Hornets Draft Show. It is the 25th of May. It's under a month to the NBA Draft. Chase, how's it going?
I'm doing very well. Draft season is in full swing. It's heating up. All the prospect profiles are coming out. Pre-draft workouts. Every single day, teams are posting them. We're hearing rumors that come out of them. I'm excited. This is a good time of year.
It is a good time of year. It's also a good time of year because we've still got playoffs going on, which are enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And before we start the podcast, and I said I wish I was recording this, I just asked Chase, what do you think the Celtics' chance are coming, you know, of coming back? And there's obviously Chase living in Maine and doing some work for Maine Celtics. And I'll tell people what Chase said. He said if they win tonight, and we're recording this on Thursday evening, he said a very good chance that they're going to come back from 3-0 down to be the first team in NBA history. He just called that a very good chance if they win tonight. So they could already be out by the time people listen to this, which would be very funny. But you did leave in that little preface there of if they win tonight, which they might not.
Right. Of course, you know, if they win tonight, there's a 0% chance they come back. So I'm going to put that in there as well. So then I can at least be right in some way. But yeah, I mean, hey, they said don't let us get one. Definitely don't let them get two. That's all I got to say.
The question that Hornets fans are wanting to know is, how much longer is Caleb Martin going to be better than Jaylen Brown?
As a company man, hopefully not very long. But, I mean, it is crazy. This is, like, one of the best role player playoff runs ever. I mean,
this is like Danny Green in the finals with the Spurs. You know, when he, like, almost, did he win finals MVP? I think that one time against the Heat. Or did he? Was he in the running for it? Like he just
yeah the, he was yeah he was
the role running. Player the role player who just became actually a key player in the series out of nowhere.
Yeah, it is like legitimately insane. He's scoring in every way, making threes, attacking closeouts, cutting to the rim, getting out in transition. Like he rebounds, he defends the other team's best player. It is just absolutely nuts. And like this is just in this series. Like he was really good against New York, or not as much New York, but he was really good against Milwaukee, especially. I mean, he literally hit one of probably the biggest shot of the whole series, a step back in Giannis's face, and then was high step backpedaling down the court, doing like the John Cena, you can't see me thing. Like that is unreal from a role player. That is just ice cold, like ice in my veins, like pure like adrenaline stuff. Like it is crazy to see him do all this stuff, given like he was an undrafted free agent for the Hornets in 2019. Like,
and we saw social media, right? They were using the punching bag that is the Charlotte Hornets of releasing him, like you said, tweeting out the press release, looking at how they kept the wrong Martin brother, all that stuff. But let's briefly just revisit that. I mean, at the time, I don't think there was a roster crunch situation. It was between Jalen McDaniels, Caleb Martin, I want to say Wes Iwundu, and I think Nick Richards, and two of those four had to go. I believe this is what it was. I wrote an article for At The Hive, which unfortunately is no longer there because At The Hive website has shifted after being cut from SB Nation. But two of those four had to go. And at the time, Wes Iwundu was the easy one. The Caleb Martin one was just the most obvious after that. Like both guys had shown more to that point. His shot was very much like coming and going. He was not the defender that he is now. Like people want to talk back about here. Like everyone knew that Caleb Martin was always going to be good. It was not the case.
You want me to read some of the replies to this tweet just to show you how the reaction has changed from in the moment to now?
Yeah,
like everybody quote tweeting it, dunking on the Hornets, like, oh, they never do anything right. They always keep all the wrong players. Some of the replies, thanks, man. Best wishes. Thank you, Caleb. These are the good moves. Couldn't thank you enough. W, good. Like, everyone just in near unanimous approval of this move. And this is obviously just a very small sample size of people on Twitter. But I think if you walked around the streets of Charlotte or anywhere in North Carolina or in the world and just asked any Hornets fan, at in that time, whether or not they wanted to like re-sign Caleb Martin to a longer term deal or waive him and move on for another player, they would have said to waive him and move on. And that's what they did. And that's
because
why at the time,
with the information we had at the time,
right? Exactly. Then no, and it's not like he was waived and then was signed to some 4-year deal for $30 million from another team because the Hornets were missing something. Miami signed him to a 2-way contract. He played on that, eventually graduated to a standard NBA deal, and is still like one of the lower salary players on their team. So it's not like they, you know, got in right when the Hornets cut him and, you know, gave him all of this money and put, like, put so much stock into him and believed in him. Of course they did do that because they signed him in general, but this is more of a testament to Caleb Martin than anything. Caleb Martin has gotten so much better over the last couple of years. He worked constantly. This is something we've always known about him, is that he has a great work ethic. He's always in the gym, and clearly it's paying off now. And there's no way to know this without it actually happening, but clearly he has the confidence and he's got enough dog in him to play in the playoffs and go back and forth with anybody and, you know, not think and be conscious about like the types of plays he's making, just be instinctual. And it's working very, very well for him. So
in the year he got cut from Charlotte, he shot 26% from three. He shot terribly at 54% at the rim. You look at the numbers, it wasn't a tough decision at the time.
No.
He had shown flashes and moments where he thought there is a player here, but they were isolated incidents. And when you look to the whole body of work over the season, it was not one that you thought we have to prioritize, you know, releasing other guys who at that point had shown more. But look, credit to Caleb Martin. Like he has absolutely proved the Charlotte Hornets wrong. That is correct. But I mean, like we've also seen it before with the Heat. Like Tyler Johnson, you know, came out of nowhere, was incredible. Hassan Whiteside came out of nowhere. Like the Heat have this track record of taking these guys on the scrap heap, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, turning them into guys who legit contributors. And they can't always like replicate that everywhere. Like that's one thing. I don't know if like Caleb Martin wasn't great this season for the Heat at all times. He was good at flashes, but at times he's like sometimes he's even out the rotation. So let's not pretend here like he has been fantastic from week one this year and it was a complete mistake. But credit to that guy, because he is, like you say, he has worked. And who would have thought 2 years ago we were sitting here with Cody Martin sitting out basically the entire season and Caleb Martin basically being in the Eastern Conference Finals and probably one of the top three players in the team. It is just another thing that says, like, don't rule out anything from happening in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument he's been the best player in the entire series on either team in the Eastern Conference Finals. So, I mean, it's just crazy. And then we can't forget, obviously, the big story is about Caleb. We can't forget the other former Hornet that's in a Eastern Conference Finals rotation right now either.
Zella! Cody, friend of the
big
podcast.
Z. It's a long, circuitous route, but he finally got there. He has finally proved...
I'm so happy for Cody.
...that he can... He not necessarily had, like, used him as, like, a backup option, but they kind of stumbled upon him being, like, a high-level contributor because, at times, Kevin Love wasn't able to stay on the court defensively. They needed someone with a little bit more mobility. It turns out that sacrificing the shooting that Kevin Love can offer you for Cody Zeller's defense and the finishing that he can offer inside and rebounding works out for them. It works out. And I mean, he's been playing like double-digit minutes a game, scoring, rebounding. He had an and one. This was the most swag I've ever seen him show in his life.
Yeah,
he hit that and one. He turned around to the camera. He hit the and one like the ref motion and just like sauntered back to the free throw line. I was like, that man is feeling himself. He is. That is a confident Cody Zeller that I have not ever seen. So it's good to see him out there playing well too. So
yeah, shout out Cody Zeller. Shout out Caleb Martin. But let's move on to the rest of the podcast topics here. In the second part of this podcast, we have Matt Babcock of Draft Digest joining us. Matt was very generous with his time, gave some fantastic insight, former agent, former scout, doing some draft content over at Sports Illustrated now. So make sure you listen to that. But before that, we just thought we'd talk some like general draft chit-chat, gossipy, leaky stuff, which has come out and about, especially about Brandon Miller over the last 48 hours. And Draft Express released a piece yesterday with a lot of interesting bits of information about Jordan ownership. But let's start with this. Brandon Miller interviewed 12 teams at the Combine. That is not normal. I just want to point out. a top three, almost lock pick, interviewing with 12 teams. For me, the reason he did that is because, and it says further on in this article, that there are still ongoing concerns here about this investigation, which I said legally he can't say anything about. But apparently there is still some concern that there will be a investigation even after draft time that might be a libel suit or someone trying to sue him. So there's still something going on there. But I do wonder if they've done that because his agent is worried that some teams will just label him as a do not draft because of that ongoing legal issue. Do you think that's what, is there any other reason he interviews with 12 teams?
I too was kind of taken aback by that and had in the moment, like zero explanation or reasoning as for why it happened. I remember on the last podcast sharing that interviews with prospects are not always, you know, by choice, like the team doesn't choose when and where to conduct interviews and with who the NBA assigns them. But I like you said, I don't think they would assign him to 12 different teams as someone who, you know, from a pure talent perspective, would in zero scenarios would ever fall outside of the top five. So, yeah, I was really confused by that as well. And it's certainly a possibility that teams want more information on that too. Like he has made no comment on it. So there's really no public. Yeah, right. There's really no public.
In the article, he says, like, he basically can't comment on a lot of what happened because it's still an ongoing case. So yeah. I'm sure all teams are desperate to sit down with him and ask him, and he basically can't comment. And in this very article, it says, teams that interviewed Miller in Chicago have privately expressed some concern regarding the fallout that might still come in the form of a potential lawsuit or follow-up investigation with yet-to-be-released details, and were hoping to get more information directly from him, which is basic code for they did not get that information. And hence why he's spoken to so many people. It also did say, and this is interesting, that the Charlotte will be doing their own investigation into Brandon Miller, that they're going to be launching that. It says, Charlotte is planning on sending its attorneys to Tuscaloosa this week. So that was this week right now, as we're talking, to conduct their own investigation into Miller's involvement in the January 6th shooting. And that Miller will also fly to Charlotte in mid-June for a workout and follow-up interview. I mean, if another Charlotte Hornets investigation, Chase, we could be waiting 9 months.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, you can't say they don't do their due diligence. So, I mean, at least.
Well, I know you were. Yeah. But it's for listeners, if you're wondering there, like, no, it was the NBA investigation of Miles Bridges. I know. I was just playing a joke at the situation that Charlotte keep finding themselves in. But, also in that report, a lot of links to Brandon Miller. I think Gavoni said there wasn't a person in the gym who didn't think that he was the favorite in the running right now. Surprised by that. The online draft community, I think, would definitely say they're surprised by that, right?
Absolutely. And like this is something we talk about a lot as Hornets fans, but especially on this podcast, because over the years, every rumor that seems to come out about the Hornets from a draft perspective does not actually come to fruition. I mean, LaMelo Ball interviewed poorly with the Hornets and they weren't interested in him. Well, he's was their third overall draft pick and is now the cornerstone of the franchise. It was that they were going to trade up to number one for James Wiseman and give up assets to do that. They obviously did not do that. I mean, nobody in the universe would have connected them to James Bouknight, and nobody thought that they were going to trade up for another draft pick to acquire Kai Jones in that draft either. Like, the rumors and what has actually panned out have not necessarily lined up. And I'm not saying that anybody has, you know, bad sources or is lying or anything like that. But I think we, with a month to go, especially, I know, even if the consensus in the whole gym is that Brandon Miller is the front runner right now, I don't think anybody like really knows where Charlotte is going to land on draft night at this point. I mean, even if they know it's between Scoot and Brandon Miller, like I don't think anybody has a firm answer, even if they may lean strongly one way or another, just because we're so far out still.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, Charlotte will know that they are the start of the draft, right? They will
absolutely
be. Like, I don't think Mitch Kupchak is a massive game player, but I can promise you one thing. I don't think he's going to publicize who they're going to take. Because I think there's going to be trade back scenarios in play. We already saw Rafael Barlow of NBA Draft Big Board. He put in his piece of the day that the Charlotte Hornets are going through their due process and are open to talks about trading back, which again links to some of the quote I talked about from Mitch Kupchak's interview following draft night. We talked about Adam Spinella on last week's episode, which thank you for everyone who listened to that, by the way. It's doing very well. That still chimes with that. So I think they're going to be keeping this as an open question right up until draft night. Even for anything, it's just to like, if everyone else is unknown, then they, you know, the better trade package they might potentially get. So, but Brandon Miller will be working out for Charlotte. That is obviously was bound to happen. And I'm interested to see when Scoop might be in Charlotte as well.
The only downside to jumping up to number two in the lottery is that now whenever the Hornets post those draft workouts, you know, there's not really much for us to look forward to anymore. You know, like last year, we got that one like 3 days before the draft where it was like the Hornets are bringing in Shaedon Sharpe for an individual workout. And it was like, oh, my God, what are we doing here? Are we going to trade up and pick Shaedon Sharpe? Is he going to fall all the way to? But I don't think we're getting anything like that this year, apart from the Scoot Henderson, Brandon Miller workouts and maybe the Thompson twins. I think we're going to be getting. Yeah. Late first, early second round and undrafted Greensboro Swarm candidates.
I don't think agents are going to be lining up one to send their people to Charlotte due to the, you know, off-court perceived culture there. But then also like two, you've got an ownership situation in flux. You've actually got quite a stacked roster. Like if you look at the wings, the four positions, the center position, I don't think there's many agents going, oh yeah, I can't wait for my player to go to Charlotte. I'm really going to try and get him in there before the draft. I don't see that happening. So I think, yeah, you probably get some maybe like guys who might be, because I do think Charlotte might look to try and trade up into that 20 range with that later pick. You might get a few still like first round guys, I think, coming in. But yeah, I don't think they're going to get many more of these late lottery players. But if they do look to trade back, then maybe there are. And maybe that's a sign if they are working out the Jarris Walkers, the Cam Whitmores, maybe that's a sign that they are looking at. And, you know, that's also part of the process. Teams like to be able to sit down with these guys and speak to them just because it's good to get intel and insight. So I wouldn't overreact too much. But that's, again, just further a little piece of the puzzle that they're looking to put it together here. All right. Well, let's go speak to Matt. He's going to be joining us after the advert break here. Really great discussion. We go into all the international prospects, basically in the draft. And Matt kind of reveals to us who his favorite. And also the Scoot versus Brandon Miller conversation at the end. There's a surprise. One from me, one from Matt in the audio. So make sure you listen to that right to the end. And you'll see there are some things that were said. Let's put it that way, right? Which I think the fans and listeners find interesting. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you after the break.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to the All Hornets podcast. This week's draft show, Chase has joined me as always, also joined by Matt Babcock of DraftDigest.com. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just got me all excited hearing that NBA draft sound effect.
Absolutely. The jingle is a great way to start. You get to hear it like one night a year, don't you, on NBA draft night. And that's a sign. It's all kicking off. Matt, you're new writing for Draft Digest this year, part of the SI Fan Nation family, which the All Hornets website is also part of. But it would be great to hear a little bit, you know, for people who maybe haven't heard of you before, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into covering, analyzing the draft, and where they can find your content this year.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll try and make a really long story as short as possible. But, you know, grew up in basketball. My dad and my two uncles have all worked in the NBA for a really long time. And grew up as a player and ended up playing at a JUCO in Florida, walked on at Arizona. Right out of college, I took a developmental coaching position with Virtus Bologna in Bologna, Italy, and then began working in the sports agency business, became an agent myself, and did that for a number of different agencies, including my own company, for a little over 10 years. And then just really wanted to get back closer to my roots and follow my family's footsteps, and decided with sort of the approval of my wife to kind of make a drastic career move when I was about 30 years old to kind of get back into scouting. And so I was volunteer scouting for Marty Blake and Associates, which was a scouting service that was put together by the NBA years ago. And Marty Blake's son, Ryan, runs it now. And I was volunteer scouting for him and just kind of get my feet wet scouting as I pursued jobs with teams. And during that time, Sports Illustrated contacted me about, you know, writing a series of stories about the NBA pre-draft process from an agent standpoint. And just all of it kind of came together as far as becoming a scout in the media, just kind of learn how it all works. And ran the NBA draft coverage for basketballnews.com for a few years, and just recently joined on with Draft Digest, and essentially, you know, doing exactly what my dad does, but instead of doing it for a team, I'm doing it in the media.
So as Matt's just outlined there, some fantastic insight you can offer from coaching to scouting to international overseas. And we're going to be touching on specifically focusing on the overseas prospects in this year's draft. And this is why there is no better person to have on other than Matt. Really excited to talk hoops with you. Chase, happy to pass over to you.
Yeah. So Matt, if you don't mind, I just have a quick question before we really dive into it here. Given your experience as an agent, do you think that like really helped you as a draft scout now that you're a part of the media? Because I mean, agency, everything. You're there for the early morning, late night workouts, in the gym, or just in the weight room, getting stronger, getting in shape. But I feel like it really helps you get a more of a personal side of a player and an evaluation. Has that helped you, like, now that you've transitioned into a different role?
Yeah, no, it definitely has. I mean, I think the combination of growing up in basketball, you know, essentially having unique access to behind the scenes of the NBA, just, you know, hanging out in my dad's office or getting access to the war room, and then being an agent and seeing the whole, you know, behind the scenes from a different perspective, essentially the player's perspective. I just really feel at this point I've got a pretty good lay of the land, jack of all trades, versatile, you know, basketball guy, you know, and maybe a little bit of a master of none, but know a little about a lot.
Hey, master of all might be the more fitting term. So we figured we'd have you on, given your expertise on the international guys, the more popular consensus prospects, probably in the mainstream media right now: Bilal Coulibaly, Ryan Rupert, James Nnaji, the three that kind of float in the late first, early second range. Which of those three guys are you kind of the highest on, and how would you project their NBA translation, whether that would be coming, being a draft and stash player, or just coming over right now after they get drafted next month?
You know, I mean, I think it's interesting because they're all kind of in the same grouping, right? And they're all very different. And I mean, I think the two that are closest would be Coulibaly and Rupert because they're wings, but they're still different in my book. I mean, Coulibaly's, recently seems like he's really filling out physically. He's got the great athletic profile, just an incredible, you know, finisher. I'm pretty excited about him, you know, having upside as a scorer slasher finisher and defensively. And the Rupert, I mean, really has a chance of being like a special defender and, you know, defend multiple positions. I'd like to see more development on the offensive end. I think with those two being wings, I'd probably, you know, lean towards Coulibaly. I'm really hot on him. And then Nnaji's just, your blue collar, kind of physical specimen big man, right? It sort of falls into like the Dwight Howard, Jalen Duren type of player where, I think his game's pretty simple, you know, physical, rim runner, rim protector, rebounder, just overall, you know, physicality. But I mean, I think there's certainly a place for a guy like that. And in regards to, you know, as far as bringing guys over or keeping them overseas, I think it really just depends on the team. I mean, I personally, when I'm looking at the draft, I would, you know, if I'm a general manager, I would like having flexibility with guys of maybe we don't decide yet. Let's have them come over for summer league. Let's spend some time with them and just kind of figure out a plan of what makes the most sense. And I think there's some situations where, you know, keeping a guy over if you draft him as a first round pick makes sense because you don't start that rookie contract cycle yet. Right. And because I don't think any of these guys are ready to contribute at a super high level. They're all going to be, you know, developmental projects on some level or another, probably for the next couple of years at least.
And the reason we picked that group of three projects specifically for Charlotte is because Charlotte have those picks at 27, 34, later on 39 or like 41. You know, they've got that plethora of picks that essentially with combining those, they can get anyone they want probably from like 20 to 40, depending on what they want to give up. And with like, even though the Hornets are a pretty poor team in terms of level performance this past year, they've actually got a bit of a roster crunch situation with the free agents. And the idea of the kind of like draft and stash of sorts kind of makes sense maybe for this team with that late first round pick. And that's why we wanted to speak about these guys individually. But it's interesting you said there, you think all those guys are a little bit further away from contributing next year and maybe trying to give them a year or two more overseas, that when they start their rookie contract, they're actually in a place where they can be more ready to contribute. But will some of these prospects, like, will they be, again, from your agent side, will they be looking for a guaranteed contract next year, or else they'll pull out the draft? Or are all these three guys definitely in 100%, and it kind of doesn't really matter to them? What sort of dynamics could be going on there?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, with these three guys, I think they all have a chance or probable, first round picks. I think especially Coulibaly and Rupert are looking like they're probably solid to at least be in the 20s. Najee possibly as well. I don't have any specific intel on their situations. My international scout, Jason Felipe, who's based in Italy, I defer to him on a lot of that. We're going to start getting that going here in the next week. Just on the outside looking on in, I would expect these guys would, for them to come over right away, definitely would need, guaranteed contracts. And, there'll be a international buyout with the two guys' contracts as well. Rupert was, if I remember correctly, is part of like the Next Stars program in Australia. Makes the negotiation for a second round pick a little bit more complicated with the international buyout included. But I don't know. We'll see. I could see it going either way with all three of these guys. Cause like I said, I don't think any of them are ready to be starters or anything like that. But to answer your previous question a little more clearly, with the Hornets, Coulibaly probably makes the most sense if you're looking to continue to build around LaMelo, just because of his finishing skills. I mean, obviously having a guy like LaMelo could really set up guys like himself. And then my concern with Najee would be, you'd have to imagine Mark Williams, after what he showed this year, even though the team struggled, Mark Williams is probably your other, building block, next to LaMelo. So, with both those guys being limited to only playing the five, where's the upside long term if both these guys can continue to develop like you hope they will?
Yeah,
especially for the Hornets, I was thinking Coulibaly for myself, because the big man market for them is they're probably pretty much out. And there's a couple international players that are big men in this class that you would think that in that range, especially where they have a lot of picks, could be a draft and stash investment. But if you want to consolidate some of those picks and move up for, Coulibaly or Rupert, I feel like that could be like a pretty realistic avenue, because, up 27 to 22 or 23 and consolidate those picks, alleviate that roster crunch, and maybe still, like you said, keep that rookie contract scale 1 year in the future.
Right.
The explosion of Coulibaly is really interesting, because, I was looking, the under 18s, the A category, he averaged 17 minutes per game. So it was like a part-time player. I read the article, I think it was by Slam maybe, that he grew, multiple inches during COVID lockdown and kind of really grew into his body. He seems like a real late bloomer. And mm-hmm. It was interesting. If he wasn't on Victor Wembanyama's team this year, I don't know do you think the scouting world will have caught up with him? Or do we think the only reason he's getting first round buzz is because a lot of general managers got to see him and they were able to watch a lot of him and they've been able to kind of get a better handle on some of the flashes they saw?
Yeah, I think that definitely helped. For me, that helped. The first time I ever saw him in person was in Vegas when they played the G League Ignite those two games. Definitely helped, because there was all eyes were on Victor this year. From my standpoint, it wasn't even after the first couple of times seeing Victor, it wasn't even from a scouting perspective. I was watching him as a fan, watching him shoot these one-footed runners at the three-point line and whatnot. But in the meantime, we got a good grip on Coulibaly.
Yeah. I'm very jealous you got to see that Vegas game. That everyone came away from that being like, this is one of those moments that you had to be there type moments.
And no, it really was. Like I said, I grew up in this and saw a lot of these guys coming up secondhand, just chasing my dad around, and never seen anything like Victor before. I went in being skeptical, not necessarily, saying I disagree, this guy's not a, generational talent. I just want to see it for myself and kind of go into the scouting, with that same approach of like, this guy needs to show me, improve me. And I'm not going to just kind of lean on everybody else's takes. And I walked away just absolutely blown away, just like everyone else.
Mm. So in your personal board, then, where do you have each of these three guys ranked currently?
Let me pull it up. I think I have them all in the first round. I've got Coulibaly going to Sacramento at 24. I've got Rupert going to Charlotte at 27.
There we go.
And then where do I have Najee? I've got Najee going right after him, the Utah at 28.
Okay, so you do have them all in the first round. It's interesting. Chase, Which one of these three guys, I know you watched some of the film, which one of these three guys stick out to you the most? Bilal?
Yeah. Koulibaly is the highest for me. I have him at 26, so pretty much on par with where Matt has him. I remember like a couple of weeks ago, I don't remember who it was that said it, but it was an ESPN graphic with him on it. And it was like, I think Koulibaly has like all defense level potential. And I mean, I don't know if I would go that far. It might be a little bit rich, like right at this exact moment, but I mean, I definitely see the vision there. And for that reason specifically, he's the highest. I guess I could ask Matt this question. So it seems like over the last couple of years, like when we were years out from the 2023 draft, Ryan Rupert was billed more as like a bigger guard, had pretty good playmaking feel for his size, was a point of attack defender, switchable through across a couple backcourt positions. But now it seems that that kind of has kind of shifted from a mainstream perspective. Whenever, Draft Express posts about him, they'll refer to him as a 3-and-D wing, like out of the New Zealand Breakers or something like that. But shooting has not necessarily been his strong suit throughout the last couple of years of his development. But you could say that he is a pretty good passer and obviously is a very good defender. I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts on how that has shifted over the last couple of years and whether or not I just have a little bit of selective memory about it or something.
Yeah, no, I mean, the reason I like him is on the defensive end. I mean, I've got a lot of confidence in his abilities on the end of the floor. And, and I think from an upside standpoint, obviously if he continues to develop as a shooter, it could potentially be a three and D type of player. But my big concern with him is just the lack of, dynamic play on the offensive end, and he really hasn't proven to be a consistent shooter just yet. So I do think there is some risk of like how much are you going to get out of him as an offensive player, but defensively, certainly. I think wherever he gets drafted, I'm assuming a big part of it's going to be because that team likes his abilities on the defensive end.
Yeah, I have to say I'm the old one out here, so I have Repair 25. I'm pretty low on Bilal. The biggest contrast, and this probably goes down to like I value as an evaluator, is feel for the game. And when you watch Repair, you see someone who's got passing feel, some pick and roll feel. He's handled the ball. And when I watch Bilal Koulibaly, some of the handling and passing instincts are like probably I'd say some of the worst. Not even like in the first round, but in the draft, like it's very basic. Everything he does, I think I wrote down somewhere that I think something like 70% of Koulibaly's offensive possessions are like cuts, transition, offensive rebounds. None of it is self-created or isolated. It's all just like has to be put on a plate for him. And that probably just comes down to like what I value. I got something like Jairus Walker up at 4 because I like those guys who have that passing feel and can dissect and stuff like that. So, but I completely understand. I mean, both guys are probably a little bit different, where Bilal is like a freakish athlete, whereas Rupert probably has those like super long, but probably not as bouncy. But it's going to be interesting to track both their progress, really. And I think, like you said earlier, it's where they end up is going to be really key in terms of fit and how the teams are able to deal with them and develop them. So it should be an interesting one to track here.
Yeah, no, I like to piggyback what you're saying there, and because I actually agree with what you're saying, but I think there's an argument that can be made is that the way you're describing Koulibaly could be looked at as a strength, specifically with the Hornets, because you've got a ball-dominant playmaker, and so putting that with a guy that can create offense, I mean, all of a sudden you got a guy with some significant defensive potential and switchability that doesn't need the ball in his hands to be effective. In certain spots, that guy makes a lot of sense and it would serve a lot more value than a guy like Rupert, that if he does tap into his offensive upside, it's probably going to be on ball, which, I mean, if you're looking 3-4 years down the road, is that a great fit? Maybe, maybe not. Koulibaly, absolutely.
I mean, how good friends are Koulibaly and Victor? Because if he wants to demand his trade out of San Antonio, then maybe, right. maybe that could have Bilal's stock rocketing here. Okay, well, really, really interesting thoughts there, Matt. I appreciate you sharing, and good to get some insight in those guys, because I think this acts as a bit of a nudge for me and Chase to go back and watch some film and these guys and some of the clips and synergy, which was definitely needed.
All right, why not shift gears to some of these second round guys a little bit here? Obviously, those three we talked about are probably the consensus highest ranked international prospects right now, but there's plenty a little bit further down the board, like Nikola Jurišić. Bobby Klintman kind of counts as both, I would say. He played around, I think, like a little over 600 minutes with Wake Forest this year, but is a, probably the draft. This draft class is unknown coming out of Sweden last year and spending 1 year at Wake Forest. Tristan Vucevic had himself a pretty good combine scrimmage there last week. And there are plenty of other guys as well that can go further down the board. But which of those guys are you the highest on right now?
Who was the first one you said? So Klintman, Vucevic.
Klintman, Jurišić, and Vucevic.
I'd say probably Klintman, and Vucevic was tremendous at that one game in Chicago. I mean, he looked like Dirk out there, just draining threes.
Yeah.
And 1 foot step backs. Really and it, you know, I mean, you know, him measuring near 7 feet and showing his ability, even though it was probably so one scout, I was still with a joke that this was the greatest game of his life, right? And, you know, you really, as a scout, you don't want to, you know, do too much of a knee jerk reaction on a guy having a hot day. But still, I mean, I can't unsee a 7 footer hitting all these different shots from all over the floor. And so, I mean, I do think his value is certainly skyrocketing. But there's some big question marks with him, too. I mean, he's not very physical. Doesn't absorb contact, not the greatest rebounder, not the greatest defender. And so, I mean, is he somewhat of a one trick pony and, you know, have a one dimensional game? Yeah, maybe. The good thing though, is it's a 7 footer and his one skill is the most valuable skill in basketball, in my opinion. Right. So, I do really like Vucevic, but I do have some questions of, you know, is he going to be able to get to the point you want him to, but we're talking about like a late first, early second round pick. I really like him. And Bobby Klintman, you're absolutely right. Like that's he's sort of the mystery man. I caught up with his agent Mike Tellum in Chicago, and I said something along those lines of, you know, he's the mystery man. I need to see him work out. I'd like to interview him. And he's like, it's funny that he's a mystery man because he played in the ACC, right? But,
yeah, right.
Yeah, but, no excuse for Charlotte, right? Yeah, he's around the corner from them.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I mean, he's just so dang intriguing. Like. He wouldn't surprise me if he was the guy that like went so much higher than everybody's expecting. I think I got him, like late first, early second. And I mean, could he be this year's like Josh Primo, maybe, you know, where it's just like he's taken so much higher than anybody thinks. But this guy's 6'10 and like does a lot of really intriguing things. And so it just that's really why I think he's sort of that guy of like, hey, we need to keep an eye on him because he you know, takes one team to shock us all that he goes a lot higher because he's got. He's got all the tools you want, you know, to give him, you know, significant upside.
So what is it that, because fans will be looking at this, you know, the more casual Hornets fans, they'll be looking at, what is it, 5 points, 4 rebounds, wasn't even in the rotation for most of the year. What led to that, right? You know, what are the weaknesses that were stopping him getting on the court at Wake Forest? Why is he the mystery man? Because there must have been something there.
Yeah, I just see. I mean, I don't know exactly why he didn't have a bigger role, but I mean, it's just the sample size is small. Because I mean, you're playing a limited role. I mean, it's hard to see all the tools. But I mean, if you really break it down, I mean, just looking at his physical tools and just kind of looking at some of the stuff that he's already able to do, even though he's in a limited role, which I'm assuming naturally would probably have, you know, somewhat of like a short leash and probably limited confidence, and he's still able to put the ball on the floor, make some crafty passes, and just for a guy that's 6'10". I mean, I'm certainly like really intrigued and we're trying to get something on the books for the next week or so of me to go out to LA to watch him work out and interview him because I want to learn more. I mean, he's, I feel like I've got a pretty good grip on most guys in this draft, but he's one of the guys that like I'm like very intrigued in or intrigued about, but like I don't feel like I've got like the full grip on him.
I have like the exact same evaluation on him right now. I was watching the Wake Forest Syracuse game, I think from the regular season. And it's like, he'll flash some like weak side, like rim protection rotation helps in some sort and make like a crazy shot block shot for a guy that doesn't play all that much and just kind of comes off of the bench and is just knows where to be. And then he'll like, he makes threes with very smooth release. Like that is pretty much unblockable from somebody that's going to also be like a bigger wing. Like, the length and skill and feel combination is just so interesting. And I mean, there's no way to really confirm this, but you'd have to imagine that the Hornets got a reasonable look at that with Wake Forest being like literally like less than an hour up the road from them. So
yeah, it'll be interesting. I hope so.
yeah, right.
Well, if you're able to go out to LA and see him, you'll have to drop us a message and let us know how that goes. Cause he is a very interesting guy here. Just back on Vucevic for a minute, which I thought was interesting. We used to have these like stretch fives who couldn't really block shots but could stretch the floor in the NBA all the time. The Mehmet Okur, the Mike Muscala's of the world. And I was just thinking like that kind of like prototype of player really seems to have gone, even though we've gone out in this world of spacing and you know, shooting and fives you can shoot, that kind of role really seems to have gone out of the NBA in recent years. And you don't see many of those European big men who would just kind of came in and gun threes. Davis Bertans, you know, can't get in a rotation anymore now. It's just an interesting reflection now. Do you think, like, Vucevic projects as that type of player? Like, basically, if he's not stretching the floor for you, he's probably going to be kind of hurting you elsewhere on the defensive end and not doing much else in offense. Is that kind of what you project him to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely spot on. I mean, that's you kind of took the words out of my mouth. Is offensively, I'm not worried about him at all. I mean, he's already at a point now. You could put him in a game and he can stretch the floor. And it's not like this guy's a very, like, you know, rigid, like, you know, mechanical shooter. I mean, he's pretty fluid. And so I think he's a versatile shooter, scorer as a stretch big. So on the offensive end, I mean, it's very clear cut the role that he could, you know, earn and develop into. It's all on the defensive end. It's like, you know, can you get him to a point where the coach is comfortable putting him out there? And I think that's why, you know, that sort of type of player is somewhat of a dying breed, just because the game's so much more spread out. If you can't move your feet and get a stop, I mean, you're probably not going to play.
Anything to finish up with Chase on the international guys in the second round?
I don't think so. I think Matt laid the land for us pretty well, I think.
Absolutely. All right, Matt, we're getting on to our final topic here, which is a hotly debated across the whole NBA, not just amongst Hornets fans, but as you can imagine, the passion which is within the Charlotte fan base. What should Charlotte do with the number two pick? We had Amos Spinella on last week. He was very firmly on Team Scoop. Great to get some of your insight here. Like you said, you were at that Vegas game. You got to see Scoop close up. What's your insight into that debate, and where do you fall?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen both players a ton. I know them really well. I know them probably just as well as I do any players in the draft. And I think, you know, the cop out answer here is Charlotte's in a very great spot. They're going to get a dang good player. Dang good
prospect, right? Thank you. There is no wrong answer here.
Yes. People needed to hear that too.
Yeah.
So I do have some, you know, convicted you know, opinions here, because I got a chance to get to know Scoot personally. Was it several years ago when he was like 15, 16 years old? His family invited me out to Atlanta, where I went to high school in Marietta, Georgia, near where he lives. And really, you know, he was a pretty highly rated high school player at the time, but nothing like he is now. And, you know, getting to know him and his family and, you know, keeping in touch with them and learning about his work ethic and his mindset, and just to see how his body and his skill sets evolved over the last few years. My confidence in that this kid's going to maximize his potential is so high. And so that's something that, like, I don't take lightly when I've got that feeling of a guy that's got sort of like that Mamba mentality where it's just you're going to get everything out of him. I think Scoot's that guy. And on top of that, he's got a lot of God-given talent too, right? I mean, physically, I mean, you've seen that guy with his shirt off. The guy's built like a tank, and he's so dang explosive.
Was he always that way? Even at 15, was he that thick? Or is that something that he's like...
No, he's actually... I mean, he's matured naturally too. I mean, as he's gotten older. But yeah, no, I saw the body type. I mean, back then, you know, that hey, this kid's going to be a really physical, explosive guard. And you know, having watched him in the G League Ignite, I mean, I know a lot of people have drawn this comparison. I mean, really feels like a, you know, Derrick Rose in his prime in regards to, like, he's always putting pressure on the defense because he's always in attack mode. And one thing I think will be interesting too, you know, coming into the NBA, I do think he's got upside as a defender. I think a lot of times in the G League Ignite, he would lose his focus a little bit because he was so focused on making stuff happen on the offensive end, and his usage was really high. I do think as he matures and the game starts to slow down for him a little bit, I think his physical tools and his toughness, I mean, he could end up being a pretty lockdown defender. He's got these really huge hands. I mean, like he's got like Kawhi Leonard type paws where he pulls up the ball like it's nothing. It looks like it would be like me picking up like a golf ball and long arms. And so I think he's got a chance to be a really good defender. And so if it were me, I would go Scoop, even though it's not necessarily the greatest fit with LaMelo as far as being two on-ball creators. But there's sort of an argument too that the way the game's being played right now with all, you know, spread out, you know, kind of key in three, having multiple ball handlers and playmakers could work. I mean, you're pretty much giving yourself an opportunity of really having a dynamic offense. I do think it needs to be catered to their backcourt in that scenario. And then with Brandon Miller, I mean, how can you not like Brandon Miller? I mean, he's a 6'9", you know, movement shooter. They also put it on the deck. And as he gets stronger, I think he's going to be a better finisher and already like a high level rebounder. So good problem to have. I mean, pick your poison, honestly.
It's another vote for Scoot, Chase. Second in a row we've got here.
What do you guys think?
So I'm Scoot Henderson. So I think at this point, especially given the guest surveys that we've had, I think I'm probably in the majority camp, but James is a Brandon Miller guy, so I'll let him make his case.
Yeah, so I probably had Brandon Miller 2 since about early February, but this is purely basketball, purely tape analysis. But the tiebreaker that all these people who are much more linked in than I have about Scoot being over Brandon is exactly the same as what you just said there, Matt, which is, you know, the intel on his work ethic, his approach, his maturity is, and that's not to say Brandon Miller's is bad, but his is like, it's the first thing that anyone talks about. And I'm a big believer that that stuff is almost as important as the tape, if not more so. And I'm, you know, if it was just off the basketball tape, I'd have Brandon Miller too. Combine the off the court work ethic, also like some of the questions that's still out there, ongoing potential court libel cases with Brandon Miller. Like the Hornets haven't exactly got a clean slate of off the court stuff over the past year. That stuff is beginning to add up. And I am, you know, I'm becoming more convinced by the day that I just want to take the person that is Scoop. Even though, like you said, it is a necessarily clunkier. And I was never a take Brandon Miller because it fits better. That's not why I like Brandon Miller. That's just my talent evaluation overall. But this is the hardest thing when you don't do the research, you don't get the intel, you know, you're not speaking to the people, which you've been able to do. So I put a lot of stock into that. So I am, let's call me undecided as of right now, but I'm continually leaning more Scoop.
Well, I've got somewhat of a hot take. They'll get your fan base going a little bit. Is okay. Say they decided to take Scoot. Right. Here's how strongly I feel that Scoot's the guy that you want to build around. Is if it doesn't work, I would probably look to trade LaMelo and build around Scoot than the reverse of it. That's how good I think Scoot's going to be. And to your point, is it's the kind of guy, like, he's a tone setter. And I mean, you know, the intel suggests that the Hornets' chemistry is not very good. I mean, obviously, they only won 27 games this year. Scoot's presence in the locker room and on the floor, even as a 19, 20 year old, I mean, you feel his presence anytime he walks into the gym. I mean, I was around Kobe a little bit, spent a lot of time around Damian Lillard at his camp Formula Zero. This kid's got the same kind of approach to working out, to the game, and you don't see that very often, you know. And the guys that are like that, usually succeed. And so that's my hot take. Is if it doesn't work, I'd probably be quicker to ship out LaMelo, because I mean, think about the return you can get if you put a guy like that on the market, right? And so I'm sure a lot of fans would flip out when they hear this, but it's just, you know, from a team building standpoint, I mean, Charlotte's a ways away. Like I think they need to do a lot. And so I wouldn't overanalyze it and pick for fit at all. Like go get the guy that you think is going to succeed. And for me, that's Scoot.
I think you
and
just
I know one thing. No, go ahead.
I think I've changed. I think I've literally changed live on air right there.
Here it is.
You know, you're talking about that. You know, if you're telling me that someone has the same presence of Damian Lillard and Kobe Bryant as you walk in a gym, I don't think it's an overreaction to think that matters.
Right.
And that's, you know, like I said, I've been leaning one way, but I think that is, it's so important. And what you will say, you are right. You will rile up the fan base, because I've seen other people suggest that. But you shouldn't rule anything out as an NBA team. I mean, you're not saying that you trade LaMelo tomorrow. You look at
this. And honestly, I think you could make it work. Yeah. I would say that, you know, if all else fails, I think that's not, in my mind, like that's not like an outlandish idea. If they draft him in 2 years from now, it's like, hey, this is not working. You know, what if we put LaMelo on the market? What does that look like? You know, and obviously, I mean, if you did it today, that's probably jumping the gun of, you know, I mean, Scoot's never played an NBA game before, right? But anyway, it's just sort of a thought that I had, just sort of, I think somewhat of a hot take, right?
Scoot number 2. I'm in. I'm all in, Chase. I'm shifting trains. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be disappointed if they pick Mill, but if you my preference now, I think I am. I have to say it's Scoop.
Yeah, hey, both are good. Board.
Yeah, and hey, but we know one thing too. We're gonna find out whether or not it works very soon, because I mean, given everything that Matt and any other report that's come out about Scoot, they're gonna have to give Steve Clifford like a 200% raise to not play him 40 minutes a game with that type of like defensive mentality and attack mode on offense out of like your lead guard or your secondary guard. Like, he's gonna absolutely love that. So we're gonna find out very soon whether or not it's a good fit together. So I mean, and that would be if they pick him, of course. But I mean, either way, it's gonna be exciting to find out.
For sure.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you very much for coming on. Any final thoughts you want to share with us at all here?
No, I think I'm good. I'm. I mean, it's interesting. You know, the draft really starts at two, right? It starts quick, and I'm looking to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Well, let the people know where they can find your work, where they can follow you on any of your social medias. For those who've enjoyed your guest appearance today.
No, thank you. So yeah, you follow me on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at MattBabcock11. My mock drafts on Draft Digest, which is part of Sports Illustrated. And then check out my podcast, the Matt Babcock Show. Share a lot of different stories about growing up in basketball, working in basketball as an agent, as a scout, you know, different stories, different philosophies I've sort of put together along the way. And talk about the NBA draft. Course, I'm an NBA draft analyst, so check that out. And next month, I'll be kind of bopping around, going to individual workouts, meeting with players. You know, going to create some content, you know, along the way as well.
Brilliant. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Take care.